Welcome to today's program titled Immigration Leading Edge, H-1B Employer Registration Requirements. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. For those of you who are logged into the web presentation, you are encouraged to submit questions throughout the conference by selecting the chat pod located in the lower left corner of your screen, then type and send your question that way. At the end of today's event, a link to an online evaluation will be displayed on your screen. Please take a few minutes to complete it. We do appreciate your feedback. I would now like to introduce our host for today's call. Diane, you may begin.
Thank you for joining us for our first in a series of webinars on hot topics on immigration law. Today we are going to discuss the new H-1B employer pre-registration process for H-1B CAP filings. USCIS, that is U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, often receives more H-1B petitions than is permitted to accept during a very short period of time in the spring each year. This triggers a random computerized selection process known as the lottery. The current process requires employers to prepare and submit fully documented cases, and it's a bit like rolling the dice without any assurance that those cases will be selected or whether they'll be rejected and returned unprocessed. Then USCIS spends months and millions of dollars returning the ones that are rejected. This pre-registration is an effort to end this burdensome process. The topics we're going to cover today are the existing H-1B process, this new electronic registration process, the registration fee, and we're going to give you some tips about information gathering and decision factors. We'll discuss what employer information is required for the registration, what employee candidate information, timing considerations before and after the registration, and what if, because this process is not necessarily going to go into place next year. Now let's go over some terminology just to make sure that we're all on the same page here. We'll be talking about the H-1B cap or the quota. Now that is 85,000 numbers for new or initial H-1B petitions. That includes 65,000 for petitions that require at least a bachelor's degree and 20,000 more for those who have at least a U.S. master's degree. In addition, there are 6,800 slotted for citizens of Chile and Singapore. So those are the cap and quota numbers. We'll also be discussing a beneficiary, which is a non-citizen of a potential employer that the employer wants to bring on board in an H-1B status. And this can include a current employee who might be working for the company in something other than H-1B status, such as a foreign student on optional practical training, that's OPT, who has an employment authorization document, EAD card. The beneficiary also includes candidates for the job openings who are not yet an employee of the company and might not even be present in the United States. We also will be discussing the registrants. Those are the employers who successfully complete this process and register their beneficiaries to submit the petitions in the lottery. Now, USCIS is not always the most successful at implementing new online procedures, so we are anticipating some hiccups along the way. And once we have registered, you definitely will deserve a pat on the back or a ta-da. We will need to discuss the timing of the existing process just so we have a baseline comparison. So currently, the time frame that we target first is October 1st. October 1st is the beginning of the federal fiscal year, and that is when new H-1B numbers become available. In immigration, we tend to count backwards. That is, we find our target date and then we calculate back so that we can plan in advance to make sure everything happens on time. So in the H-1B lottery situation, an employer can file an H-1B petition 6 months in advance. That's April 1st of each year. Because we anticipate that all of the H-1B numbers will be used up quite quickly, almost all employers do file 6 months in advance. That results in hundreds of thousands of H-1B petitions being shipped off to USCIS on March 31st of each year for the April 1st date when the window opens. So to prepare for that April 1st date, we need to start thinking about preparations now, or at least no later than December of this year, continuing on through March of next year. So during this time frame, we need to be identifying the candidates and potential beneficiaries who could hold the H-1B jobs, compiling all the information about them, the jobs that they'll hold, the salaries, what the requirements are for the positions, compiling any supporting documentation such as diplomas, transcripts, and we also need to anticipate filing the labor condition application, which is a prerequisite for filing an H-1B petition and is submitted to the Department of Labor. So again, these actions should be occurring from December through March, that is, if we were on the regular H-1B lottery timeframe. Then, from April 1st to April 7th, USCIS will receive all these hundreds of thousands of H-1B petitions. The window is open for 5 business days, and next year in 2020, that 5 business day timeframe will end on April 7th. From April to November, we would anticipate the waiting game would occur. That is, during that time frame, the H-1B petitions might be accepted and then processed. Those of you who have filed H-1Bs know that it's very likely that that USCIS might send a request for additional evidence, an RFE, in that time frame. But I can tell you that we have some cases now, November 2019, filed in April, that still are pending, not processed, and not even received an H-1B RFE. So we are hopeful that this new registration process might provide a higher level of predictability. So again, to summarize, we are in the time frame of the light blue box on the right, April 1st to November, in the waiting game. October 1st is the time frame we're aiming for each year. April 1st is when the filing window opens, and in between times, we are preparing our H-1B petitions. And this waiting game does end up being a kind of a game that can be akin to bingo, because if you win the lottery, and if your petition is approved, that's quite an accomplishment. So USCIS has decided to implement a new rule, this registration rule, where the employer must submit information online and then also must have a registration selected in the process to be eligible to even file an H-1B cap petition for a named beneficiary. So let's talk about who's covered and who's not covered. Those who are covered are the H-1B, as we call it, cap subject petitions. Those are new H-1Bs to be filed. Not covered or exempt are certain designated cap exempt H-1B petitions, in particular for nonprofit research organizations affiliated with a university or an institute of higher education. And also exempt are H-1B beneficiaries or workers who already have been counted in the H-1B cap. Now, as I mentioned, this registration process for the coming year is not yet a certainty. The rule actually became effective this year, and it was suspended for this April 2019 filing for FY, that is fiscal year 2020. It might be suspended again next year if USCIS feels it's not ready to implement the electronic process. However, The director of USCIS in a recent public forum announced that they are hopeful that they can make a decision as early as December of this year as to whether or not they will proceed with the registration process. So stay tuned, but we will keep you up to date. So why is this occurring? Why are employers going to have to register? Well, primarily it's to end the avalanche of petitions, which neither USCIS nor employers like. And I think it will have the benefit of promoting advanced planning and offer more workforce predictability. At least we will not be submitting petitions and waiting to find out whether that individual will be able to work for the company or not. But it also provides USCIS more processing predictability. All right, where do we go to register? USCIS has a website, my.uscis.gov. It is active now for some purposes, some limited level of filing petitions and tracking information, but it is not yet active for the H-1B registration process. The website, in fact, says coming soon, stay tuned, and you will find out what the process is to use the electronic system. But we have seen some advanced information and know what some of the information is that will be required. So the system will require information about the employer, about the beneficiary, and there also will be a requirement to pay a $10 registration fee. The employer must register the beneficiaries, and there's no limit to the number of beneficiaries that can be registered, but only one registration per beneficiary is allowed, no duplicates. And USCIS is so serious about that that they have announced that all registrations relating to a beneficiary, if there are duplicates, will be discarded. We have a sense, too, that if USCIS notices that employers are duplicating registrations, that there might be some restriction on using the registration process in future years. Now, the information about the employer that will be required in the registration is not very extensive. The employer needs to create an account and will need to submit the company name and any doing business as name, any DBA. We'll need to provide the primary U.S. office street address, not necessarily the work site, but the primary office street address, and also include the federal employer identification number, the EIN or FEIN. There needs to be an authorized signatory for the employer, and that person's legal name must be provided, as well as their position title, daytime phone number, and email address. So again, not much information required for the employer to register and complete the account. For the beneficiary, there's not much information required either. I have to provide the full name, whether the person is male or female, date of birth, country of birth, and country of citizenship, whether or not the person has a U.S. master's degree or higher, their passport number, and whether or not we're requesting an October 1 start date. Of course, for most of these situations, we will be requesting an October 1 start date. Now, I think it's rather surprising that there is no information required about the position. We're not going to have to submit the job title, any job duties. Those of you who have filed H-1B petitions know that we, at some point, we need to provide the government OES code for the job, degree requirements, such as whether a computer science degree, electrical engineering degree is required, and wage information. Though that information will be required on the H-1B petition, but it's not necessary to include that information at the registration process. Now, I see we have one question that is, can multiple employers register for the same beneficiary? Yes, that is possible. There will not be considered a duplicate. There also is a question about whether the LCA, the labor condition application, will be required before registration. No, it will not be required. However, that is a consideration as to when to submit a labor condition application. We are recommending that we keep on the same time frame for submitting the labor condition application, which may be submitted 6 months in advance of the first start date. That usually results in a start date earlier than October 1st, since we are planning in advance. So, for example, when we file LCAs on February 1st, that results in an August start date. But this will not be it will not be required to file an LCA in advance. There will be the $10 registration fee, which will be submitted at the end of the registration process and can be paid by electronic withdrawal from a bank account, through a credit card, or a debit card. Now, one side tip that's not directly related to the H-1B registration process, but USCIS has announced that it will be imposing filing fee increases going into effect this month. The end of this month, that is, November 29th, and the H-1B I-129 filing fee will increase to $560. So if you are working on H-1B petitions now, you might want to try and get them out the door before the end of November. There will be a certification required for the authorized signatory to confirm that the company does indeed plan to submit an H-1B petition for any selected registrants. We've also heard that there might be a certification by attorneys. Attorneys certainly can submit the registrations on behalf of the employers, and of course we would be happy to do that on your behalf. And we have not seen yet a certification requirement or any G28 notice of attorney type information in the registration process, but we are anticipating that that might be included as well. At the end of the registration process, there will be a confirmation. This is for any that are where there is a successful registration. There will be a number assigned. Now, this will be different from the H-1B petition receipt number that we receive once we file an H-1B petition. And again, we're not certain yet what sort of format this will be in, but we are going to recommend that you print the confirmation number as soon as you see it, or save a screenshot just to make sure that it remains accessible in the event that the registration is selected. So effectively, what's happening here is that USCIS is creating a mini lottery, or a sort of a pre-lottery, for H-1B petition submission. So as the current process stands, full petitions are submitted to USCIS and then subjected to the random selection, the lottery, and petitions are returned. But with the registration process, it is the registrations themselves that will be subjected to the random selection or the lottery. Now, when will this occur? Well, we are still not quite sure, because the guidance available only says that it will commence after the end of the initial registration period. So that would be no sooner than April 1st of each year. And the guidance indicates that USCIS will notify the registrants of the selections. We have to presume that that would be notification through the email of the authorized signatory for the company. So when you select who is going to be the authorized signatory, make sure that they have an email address that is likely going to be effective well into April. However, we recommend keeping an eye on the employer's USCIS account, because the selection notification certainly should occur there. and we are expecting that there might not be a notification of rejection or non-selection. But as soon as we find out more information about that, we will certainly let you know. So here is what we are anticipating the time frame to be before April 1st of next year, assuming the registration occurs. Going to the right, we are anticipating that sometime between next month, December and February, USCIS will let us know whether or not the registration will go forward. They have stated that at least 30 days before April 1st, they would announce the registration period. So that would be no later than March 2nd. And at least 14 days before March 1st, the registration window would open for at least 14 days. So that would be no later than March 18th and last through March 31st. Then after April 1st, USCIS would conduct the lottery of the registrants and, we presume, notify the employer of the selection or rejection. Then, once the employer has been notified, they will have 90 days to submit the full H-1B petition. This is the main objective of instituting this registration process, to allow a longer period of time to submit the full H-1B petitions rather than sending everything in the FedEx and U.S. trucks and keeping them on the road and full on March 31st through April 6th. Now, one thing we want to highlight is make sure that you have your confirmation of registration and selection in the process with your assigned number that you submit with your H-1B petitions, because USCIS will reject all of the H-1B CAP cases that don't have the matching registration acceptance confirmation. So again, here's a summary of the timeline for the projection. Starting from now, we're hoping to find out from USCIS sometime between December and February about whether we're going forward or not. And then by the beginning of March, March 2nd, what the registration period is. And then by March 18th, there'll be the flurry of activity when we all are testing the system, submitting our registrations through the end of March, and then anxiously awaiting April 1st or shortly thereafter, finding out whether or not we won this little mini lottery and have been selected to submit the H-1B petitions. Then there'll be a more leisurely period of time from about April 1st to June 30th, the 90-day period, when we can submit the full H-1B petitions. So we want to give you a few tips about what to do in advance. First of all, we recommend obtaining the IRS letter that has your federal employer identification number on it, because that seems to be a critical factor in verifying that an employer is in existence and could be authorized to submit an H-1B petition. Of course, you'll want to be identifying your H-1B beneficiaries in advance, those that you are anticipating hiring. Again, this would be for a start date of no sooner than October 1st. That part of the process hasn't changed. The necessity of looking pretty far down the road and anticipating work needs, but we do need to consider who those beneficiaries might be so we can line up the information to submit the information in the registration process. Now, one thing about that is it's going to be a good idea to check the beneficiary's passport expiration dates, since that's a key factor. If a passport expires and the passport number that appears on the petition is different from the one that appeared in the registration process, it might at least slow the process down. And so we might want to make sure to recommend that potential beneficiaries have updated passports by the time that we are filing in the registration process. And of course, you're going to want to review your job descriptions, prevailing wage information, and make sure that you're going to have the work that you anticipate by the time October 1st of next year comes around and have the position available for the beneficiary. So let's talk about some what ifs, since this process is not certain to come into place. What if USCIS decides not to do the registration? Well, in that case, we will be back to the lottery as we've had it in the past, and we will be filing LCAs and preparing full petitions around the same time frame that we have in the past, up through March 31st. Now, what if an employer is selected in the registration but doesn't use a registration for that particular beneficiary? This is an important one to note, because USCIS wants this system to be successful and they want to minimize the potential for fraud. And so they have indicated that if an employer has a registration that is selected and not used, then potentially that employer might not be able to use the registration process in the future. It seems like a fairly harsh result, and there should be some exceptions to that rule, but please do bear that in mind as you're thinking about the registrations to include in the system. And what if a registrant is not accepted in the lottery? Well, many times we are able to find alternatives which may require more effort and may require some strategy, but for any beneficiary not selected, we should look at alternatives. However, an H-1B petition would not be accepted if the registrant is not accepted in the lottery. And what if the information in the registration has changed in the meantime? Well, there again, for example, if the authorized signatory's email address has changed, the worst case scenario there would be that there would not be an email notification. However, there still should be an option to go back into the employer account and find out whether there has been a selection in the registration. Now, with any of these types of accounts, make sure there likely will be passwords and usernames and all of that sort of information. So when we prepare the account, we're going to want to make sure that we're keeping track of all that information so we can get back to the system later on. Now, this is an employer registration process, but we are certainly here to help you with it. And as indicated, we can submit the registrations on behalf of employers. We are preparing our charts of information for employers even now. We've started a few months ago, in fact, for those who are anticipating submitting H-1B petitions for their valued employees and candidates for next year's system, however it may appear. So that's pretty much the nuts and bolts of what we know so far about this registration process. So we have a few questions that have been submitted, and one of the questions we have is, who places the information into the system to register the beneficiary? Would this be the attorney or the company point of contact? And the answer is that it could be either one. The attorney can register for employers for many different types of systems, including this particular system, or the employer could do it on their own. Another question we have is, did I see that nonprofit post-secondary education employers are exempt? Nonprofit post-secondary education employers are exempt from, they're one of the categories that are exempt from this system. That means they can submit H-1B petitions at any time during the year and don't have to be limited to this lottery time frame. Do you recommend filing H-1B prevailing wage requests with the Department of Labor for CAP subject petitions? Now, that's a good question. That is, so that brings in a question about two different types of prevailing wage requests. One is the labor condition application, which I mentioned, and that can be processed within 7 days by the Department of Labor. There also is another type of more certain prevailing wage requests, which could be filed with the Department of Labor. And this is a rather technical question, so anybody who would like further information about this later on could certainly contact me. But the issue is that if you have time to file a prevailing wage request with the Department of Labor that where you submit more information than the LCA, that would be advisable because it could result in more likely success on an H-1B petition. Another question, why won't employers file even more registrations than before? They might, yes. I think it's highly likely. There could be, who knows, maybe 300,000 registrations submitted during this registration period rather than the around 200,000 in the prior years. But I think USCIS feels like they would be successful if they end up with less work on the back end receiving full petitions that they have to send back rather than just dealing with the electronic registration and putting all of those registrations through their lottery. Question, do you have a date when this will take effect, when in December? Well, if it takes effect, it would be in that March timeframe of next year, but we are looking for an announcement about whether or not it will be implemented as soon as December of this year. We have a question, how does the LCA fit in with the new registration process? The LCA submission is separate from the new registration process, but there is really not much of any disadvantage to filing an LCA early. We've seen some that are filed as early as January. Again, that shortens the life of the 3 years of the H-1B. And if you want more information about that, that's a rather technical question as well. But regarding the time frame of the LCA, but at this point, we would recommend going ahead and filing the LCA probably no later than February just to have it in hand. We have a question, what happens to the slot one in the lottery if the full H-1B proposal for the winner is rejected? Does this open up a slot for someone previously rejected? Well, interestingly, USCIS has said that they will keep all of the registrations on file, and they even have a provision in their announcement saying that if they don't receive 85,000 registrants, then they will keep it open and accept more. They generally in the past have had a lottery selection process where they anticipate that some will be denied or withdrawn, and USCIS has stated that they actually accept more than the 85,000 anticipating that. So it's likely that that would occur, but I doubt that they would go back and notify any employer who submitted a registration that they now are eligible to submit a petition in the lottery. That would require some sort of first in, first out tracking process or another mini lottery to figure out from among those registrants. So I don't think as a practical matter it would be possible for someone who was not selected in the registration lottery to then be called up, so to speak, and permitted to submit an H-1B petition thereafter. Okay, we have another question. It was my understanding that the registration lottery would occur and notifications of selections issued at least 14 days prior to April 1st, and then petitions would have to be filed in the usual frenzy of April 1 through April 6th. That's not how it's supposed to occur. There is supposed to be the 90-day time frame for submitting H-1B petitions after the selection occurs. And we have a question, is this truly a lottery or are they registering to pre-select people with credentials? No, there is no indication that they are there, that even the factor of stating whether or not the potential beneficiary has a U.S. Masters cap would come into play in deciding who is selected in this registration lottery. But because none of the other criteria is included, then it's not possible to pre-select people based on any other type of credentials other than potentially U.S. master's degree. So that is the end of our questions for now. Again, we are here to help you with getting through this process, and you are welcome to contact us afterwards with any questions you may have regarding H-1B petitions, the registration process, or any other questions or issues you have for immigration. Davis Wright Tremaine's immigration group does focus on employment-based immigration, and we have a broad range of capabilities, and we love what we do, and we are happy to assist you with any issues or questions that may come up.
Thank you so much for your insights today. And the link to an online evaluation is now displayed on your screen. Please take a few moments to complete it. We do appreciate your feedback. And this concludes today's webinar. Thank you for attending.
Thank you.